This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly entertainment podcast. You can find us on any podcast app you use. We're also at thehollywoodoutsider.com. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'm going to be your host. Joining me today is Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And we've got quite a little special episode for you. It's kind of like a super spoiler cast. Aquaman, Mary Poppins Returns, and Bumblebee have now all hit theaters for the holiday season. One, an enormously charismatic hero with the ability to communicate on a deeper level with every living being while simultaneously saving lives. The other two are Aquaman and Bumblebee. On this special episode, we're going to look at all three of these potential behemoths and their respective plots and details. So please check your show notes if you want to skip ahead to those sections. If you just want to find one of those movies, that you can find the time for them in there. Before we get to Mary Poppins, though, I do want to mention I did see a documentary called They Shall Not Grow Old. You heard about this one, Amanda?
I have, yeah.
It is, just so you know what it is, it's Peter Jackson took World War I footage. And I just want to mention this because it's like a limited release thing. It's going to be hard for you to find. But if you like documentaries, this was amazing to see, even more so from a technological standpoint. They took old footage from World War I, the Great War, that happened like 1914 through 1918, whatever the years were.
I don't know.
And he reconstructed all of it. So he basically cleaned it up. Got rid of any artifact issues, smoothed it out, added colorization, brought in lip readers to read what people were saying so he could implement and recreate some of the audio. And he basically just reshaped this old footage into a new movie to kind of tell you their story. And he uses audio archives of survivors from World War I to tell that story. So he uses that and it creates almost a narration of the story. It's a fascinating documentary on world. If you like history, if you like World War I, I don't like history. I'm just kind of like, let's just keep repeating it. Let's just keep making the same mistakes. I'm all good with that. I don't need to learn about the past. This was fascinating. I just really, really thought it was a technological achievement. And if they could do more of this in other documentaries, I think you could really bring in people who don't typically watch them to actually learn more about a topic or subject. So They Shall Not Grow Old. Be sure to find that if you can. Maybe not in theaters because it's very limited. Maybe down the road, but just keep an eye on it.
It looked fascinating. Is the colorization, like, does it look like somebody watercolored it?
Yeah, it looks like graffiti. They just threw paint at it. Yeah.
They did it in paint through windows. That's why paint stuck around.
No, it really works well. Are some moments where it's a little off-putting because you're like, it doesn't look like a real person. That looks more like somebody who had bad plastic surgery. But overall, yes, it works. So let's get into it. Here's how we're going to do it. Mary Poppins Returns. Amanda's going to join me for that one. Then she's bailing. And then John Davenport's going to join me for Bumblebee. And then he's going to stick around. And then Brian Williams, a founding member of The Ho, joined us to talk about Aquaman. So you got a whole bunch of people throughout this episode. You got three spoiler casts in one episode. We're going to just take a couple of weeks off and not do anything, but these are the big ones.
We're doing this for you.
Yeah, we're doing it for you. Yeah. Not because we like to hear ourselves talk. I'm just going to listen to this. I don't care if anybody else does. I just listen to it over and over. looped.
Is that why I'm not doing Aquaman?
You weren't invited.
Yeah. So you guys don't want to hear me talk about how hot Jason Momoa was.
Yeah. And the word moist does come up.
Permission to come aboard.
we never talked about that. We already recorded that. So we're here. Here's a peek into the curtain. But we didn't talk about that.
Yes, please.
We should have.
You should have. Absolutely.
A whole segment on permission to come aboard and how he sexually.
There's a lot of sexual tension.
There's a lot of tension with the armed bodyguards that he's threatening at that moment. Yeah, he's kind of like, permission to come aboard. Makes no sense.
He also flips his hair back as because he's turning around. Yeah, he does do that. But he's like looking backwards at them. Very, very sexual.
So what's up, guys? I'm here for you.
Permission. And he kind of raises his eyebrow a little bit.
He does. I mean, it arches up. But we're here. Amanda's here to join me to talk about Mary Poppins Returns. So let's trip a light fantastic as we sashay into Mary Poppins Returns. Emily Blunt picks up the umbrella and returns to theaters just in time to put that stoic narcissism and delightful penchant for a song to the test and save the Banks family from certain ruin. Michael Banks, he all growed up, and he's now widowed with three kids and spends an ample amount of time with his activist sister Jane. When a shady bank manager, played by Colin Firth, threatens to take their home if he doesn't pay back a loan, desperation sets in. Thankfully, Mary Poppins is in the air, Rhea.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm proud
of
that.
We went there. Okay. Yep,
I wrote that. I wrote it. Joined by Hamilton star Lin-Manuel Miranda and directed by Chicago MC Rob Marshall, Emily Blunt grasps a hold of Mary Poppins and makes it her own, but doesn't live up to the original. Poppins, music, insanity, and family. Let's explore this world of imagination. And briefly, before we get into the spoilers of it, even though this is a spoiler cast, just your overall thoughts in case people just want to hear quick, like two or three sentences max, Amanda.
Okay, I'll be quick.
Mary Poppins.
The movie could have been a little bit shorter, but overall, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to a second viewing, and I think Emily Blunt was perfect. I cannot stress that enough. I in comparison to Julie Andrews, like, I'm sorry, but I think she kind of knocked her out of the water.
Well, some people just threw stuff at the radio.
Or they turned
the
it off.
Phone or whatever. Yeah. So I love the original. The music here was not as catchy, but still really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the Lin-Manuel Miranda
really?
Adoration. I've never seen Hamilton.
Okay.
So I've never seen Hamilton. I can only base him on this. But overall, it brought back a lot of magic from the Disney movie, the original Disney movie, which is hard to do. And I agree. Emily Blunt was just fantastic. And I have read one of the original books. It's closer to that, I think, than Julie Andrews was, but it's also been a long time since I've seen the original Mary Poppins. So
same.
Yeah. But okay. So now we're going to talk about the spoiler cast. If you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, I would not listen any further because it's
I don't even happen. Know why you open this. But
skip ahead to all the sexy talk about Jason Momoa and, you know, how he's shirtless for no reason.
For often. Every good reason.
Well, I really wonder, why does he never wear a shirt?
Nobody wants to see him wearing a shirt.
I'm pretty sure guys are okay with it.
No.
Because it makes us feel insecure, really.
Well, you guys really should feel insecure.
Doing us a disservice. I don't want to have to go to the gym that much. All right. So, let's get into it. Okay. You have seen the original with Julie Andrews?
I have, but it's been a long time.
So when you first left this, how did you compare it to that one? Because it's impossible to not compare these two. It's really
I mean, it's everybody's going to be doing their own comparison. For me, I don't really remember every detail of the original Mary Poppins, like the story itself. I mostly remember Julie Andrews, which says a lot about her. Like, that's a testament to her persona of Mary Poppins, you know, that she did so great that
it's iconic.
The only thing I can remember is how good she was. And so for me, it was kind of, I'm leaving here and I'm overwhelmed by Emily Blunt's performance. And I'm already to this point, like, wow, she really knocked Julie Andrews out. And so that was a huge thing for me to be like, oh, wow, she did better than the thing that was so iconic that I can only remember that about the original movie because it's been so long since I've seen it. So my biggest comparison was just between the two characters, as I assume most people would. I don't really remember the music from the first one that much. Like, I can't – even this one, some of the songs weren't that memorable.
Triple A Fantastic was really
good. I loved that one.
And the Imagination. You know,
the
one,
book?
Yeah. No, not the book. Can You Believe in Imagination or whatever.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I liked the cover is not the book.
Yeah, that was good too.
Those two were my favorites. But Triple Little Light Fantastic. Triple Little Light
I loved everything that Emily Blunt sang. I thought she
was. Everything she did.
I had no idea she was this talented. Like, as much as I dug her in other stuff, I had no idea she was this talented. Zero idea.
Yeah.
I was stunned. That she could sing and dance and everything. I'm like, what is going on? When did Emily? I did not know she was this good, but she's great.
She can do anything.
She's great. So,
what about you with the original Mary Poppins?
For me, it's really hard. I grew up with Mary Poppins. I mean, I grew up. My mom, you know, loved Mary Poppins, so I watched it growing up. I was enamored with Julie Andrews. I kind of thought she was hot. I'm not gonna lie. I was kind of like, hey, I wish she was my nanny. And Emily Blunt plays her, like, she really makes it her own. I'll give her that. Like, 100% makes the character her own.
Well, 100%? You don't think that she has, you can see some of Julie Andrews.
No, because I read the first book. So, I mean, or I read one of the books. I don't remember which book it was, but I remember reading it. And the character's very much like the book. It's more like the book than I thought Julie Andrews' character. So, if you read the book, like, it's just, to me, she makes the character her own. I felt it was. She played the narcissistic qualities better.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
To me. But it's too soon for me to say that she blew her out of the water. But I definitely, at this stage in the game, without really having much distance from seeing it, I think I enjoyed the performance more from her. I don't enjoy the movie more. The movie right. I enjoy better, the original movie. I just feel like Emily Blunt kind of did her own thing, and I liked her thing a little bit more than I liked Julie Andrews' thing.
Yeah. Well, and for part of it, in my perspective, is that she didn't play it as safe as Julie Andrews did.
Yeah, she was more smug, I thought.
She was, yeah. She took more risks in terms of her character and her responses and her demeanor, where Julie Andrews, I think, as for the time that she did that performance, I think it was perfect because people weren't going that far over the edge with their characterizations or anything in terms of being smug. She was very classy, and she was kind of just maintained that huge elegance. Not that Emily Blunt doesn't maintain that here, but she really does kind of strive for a new level in her performance. And does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it really speaks to the movie as a whole, because as a whole, I can honestly say Emily Blunt is what makes the movie works. What makes the movie work. It actually makes more sense if you say the words the way that they're meant to be said. Lin-Manuel Miranda does a fine job. I have no problem with him. But any time, with the exception of Triple Light Fantastic, which I thought that sequence and that song was just great, whenever she's not there, my interest in the movie waned.
Yep. Yeah. I can agree with that.
You know, at the very beginning, it was kind of like, God, when is she going to get here? Because, you know, this is dragging a little bit. And then when she gets there, I'm like, ah. Now this movie's magical.
Yeah.
That's when the movie really picks up and takes off. And she just, there's something about her performance that I found captivating. It's like she just floats on a light every scene she's in. I know that sounds weird, but that's how I felt. I mean, I really felt like every time I saw her sing and dance and talk and take care of the children.
She could just literally stand there.
Yes.
And I'd be like, oh.
It was, it sounds so, you know, almost cliche, but everything she did opened the movie up for me. To where it just went from being another ho-drum Disney flick that I've seen 1,000 times to being something special. Her mm-hmm. performance, I really believe, is something special. And that's hard to do when you're essentially playing the same role someone else played to such an iconic level.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, I don't want to just keep raving about her, but she really makes the movie for me. She makes that movie pop. And
how did I know you were
going to
go there?
I did not write that one, and I wish I would have scraped it. Okay, so much has been made about Hamilton star Lin-Manuel Miranda and his role as Jack. He's the lamplighter. It's a very prominent role for a movie about Mary Poppins. So what did you think about Miranda?
I adored him.
Really? Did you like the voice? Because I really thought that was his actual voice, but it's not. It's really that choice he made to make it very, was it Cockney, whatever it is, that era of the UK. I get it. I mean, he's trying to speak in a specific voice of that time frame,
mm-hmm.
but it was a little distracting at times. I think.
Really?
Yeah, just a little bit.
When I first saw him, so he's strolling around on his little bicycle in the beginning, and this is before
the
Mary Poppins.
Skies
yeah.
song
and I was like, maybe this isn't the strongest performance from him. And then as it progressed, as the movie went on, I was like, I really just want to see Jack and Mary Poppins on screen the whole movie. Like, I just wanted the two of them there the whole time because I adored them both so much. Because of the two of them.
He did win me over. I'm not trying to say I didn't like him. I mean,
right.
He started off rough for me, but he won me over.
Yeah, he was pretty magical to me. I mean, in no comparison to Emily Blunt, but I didn't even care about the bank story. I was just like, oh, I just want to see Jack sing and look at Mary Poppins and have Mary Poppins be kind of snarky and, you know, do her thing and look lovely. And
Yeah, I didn't either. I really didn't care about the family.
I mean, we needed it because, that's
the
story.
I mean, you got to have a story, but right. I just wanted to watch Mary Poppins do her thing.
And, yeah.
And also get away from I actually want to get away from the kids because little Georgie was creeping me out a lot. There's something about that kid. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he's a lovely fellow. I'm not knocking the kid. But there's something about in those boys' eyes. Like, he's maybe a little nervous.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was going to cut.
Like, he's going to be in Child's Play next year.
He was going to cut Mary, is what I was worried about. He was just going to, you know, when she wasn't looking and just, and I wasn't having it. Don't touch her. Don't do it.
Leave her alone.
So, yeah, Miranda, good. I mean, I thought he was good. Maybe I need to see Hamilton or hear the music or something because I just don't get – he didn't dazzle me in any way. I thought he was good. I mean, I think a lot of guys would have been good in that role. He didn't stand out to me like he is the only one that could play that part. That's what mm-hmm. I think that part needed, and I didn't get that.
Sure. I mean, I guess, see, when I think about it, though, I'm like, who else would have played him? Like, sure, Ryan Gosling probably would have been dazzling, but he would have been too much. He would have tried to, like, he's so over the top and also amazing, but also beautiful that he would, I think, take away from Emily Blunt, where Lin-Manuel Miranda is charming, and he's very sweet, and he's got a lovely voice that I do enjoy. And normally I'm not like, ooh, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, there's a lot of people who, like, fangirl.
Are you a Hamilton fan?
I mean, I appreciate it, but and I respect him for all of the work that he does, and I do enjoy him, like, as a performer, but it's not something where I've ever been dazzled by him, and this movie made me feel dazzled.
Well, I mean, I know the guy's talented. The Hamilton, I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it, so I know the guy is talented. I can only speak to this particular part. And speaking of, here's Lin-Manuel Miranda explaining why he loves Mary Poppins and the message of their film.
Well, I think one of the things that's kind of great about Mary Poppins is she sort of never talks down to the kids. You know, she has this way of injecting fun and joy into the world, but so much of that is about just flipping your perspective on the world as it is, as taking challenges and taking the mundane or the difficult and flipping your viewpoint, and suddenly it's a magical place. You know, a bath becomes an adventure. Cleaning your room becomes a thrilling musical number. You know, getting lost becomes an opportunity. You know, that's that notion of the way you see the world affects how you live in it and affects how you treat others. I think it's more important now than ever. The lesson of this film is, it is about perspective. It is about cherishing what you have. It is about the way you choose to experience something affects your life and your family and your outset. You know, the Banks family faces many challenges in this film. But I think what they realize at the end is they have each other, and that's what matters. And that's more important than any material thing.
Okay, now back to our spoiler cast. The story here, very simplistic. Dad's in a bind. Mom's dead. Kids aren't allowed to be kids, and Mary Poppins is here to save the day. Was it worth the trip back? Because here's the bigger question, I think, for fans of the original. Did we need to go back and see Mary Poppins again? Did this need to happen? I know everybody's like, well, you don't need any movie. But this is iconic. Did we need to revisit it, or should it just have been left alone? Where do you land?
Honestly, I would not have cared if they would have just left this alone and never touched it. But I'm really glad that they did. The story was very mediocre for me, where I just didn't seem to really care about it. It was kind of predictable. We knew it was going to happen, blah, blah, blah.
Didn't you? But it was, couldn't you, like, predict every single beat of that story, exactly how it was going to end?
Except
for the Dick Van Dyke.
Well, that, and also
convenient Dick Van Dyke cameo. But, like, I mean, he comes in and saves the day. That was kind of a...
It was really cute, though.
It was cute.
And he danced.
He was great. And he did that. I guess he did that. I looked it up. He freaking did that. I thought it was CGI. Dude can dance.
Yeah, he did it. And the moment when they go into the bowl.
Oh, to fix the bowl. Yeah. So creative.
That was really creative. I didn't expect all of that from that. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't something that was predictable for me. So that I appreciated. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, like, set it into a different realm where I was like, okay, this isn't, not every single thing I know is going to happen. So that's kind of cool. But the story, the bank story, was just very bleh. So I didn't really care about it, but I cared about the dad not being a jerk anymore, because, man, he was good at being mean.
Hey, I got where he was coming from. Everybody's like, man, he's so mean. I'm just like, I get where he's come from. He might lose his house. God.
Yeah, but he could be a little nicer.
He could be, but he's going to lose his house.
Triple little light fantastic, man.
That's oh, God, I'm going to hear that for the rest of the year. That's stressful. It's very stressful, and I could see, you know, he's worried. I mean, it's kind of his own fault. Stay on top of things. Man, don't blame it. Well, my wife took care of everything. Well, she's dead, dude. Your job's up. Step up to the plate. No excuses.
Yeah. I don't know. So
I was leery about going back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was. I was really leery because it is so iconic. I had some trepidation for Emily Blunt. I don't know why. I guess probably because I've never heard her sing.
Yeah, and we've never seen her in a role like this before.
It's not about it's not about this. It's about that specific role. It's this specific role. I didn't see a reason to – it's one of the few performances in history I would dare say is iconic in that I didn't see a reason to come back to it except for cash money, mm-hmm. you know, which is right. obviously Disney's motive. But to me, that movie, the role itself is very iconic. The character so iconic. And the way that it's made, like the kind of movie it is and
right.
all the Disney magic that happens and everything. Like, I just couldn't see that ever working today. And it does. It really does. Like every time they do something that uses the imagination, they really went places that brought back the memory, my memories of the original, which I thought was near impossible to do. I mean, you're talking about the cup scene where they actually used old school animation for that. I was expecting some CGI. Well, I'm sure it is CGI, but I was expecting like Toy Story, Pixar kind of animation. Right. And instead they went to old school. And I just thought that was great. Brought back some magic that I needed. And it really came around for me.
Speaking of that,
I didn't care about the Banksy there.
A little worried when they did that. The animation style they used.
Like, oh, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I was just like, this is very, like, you're doing a very grounded performance here. And I feel like the original Mary Poppins could probably get away with that sort of thing because of the time that it's in now. I'm like, kids are probably going to be like, what the heck are we, like, y'all couldn't put some money into the budget of it? But it worked. There was magic in it.
And I appreciate that they stuck with that as yeah. opposed to trying to make the kids
try to conform to modernization.
Yeah, you know, they actually. If you're going to make something nostalgic, make sure it's nostalgic for the people that remember it, yeah. not just for the people that have just discovered it. Make it nostalgic for people that grew up with it, and that's what they did. They created a movie that will work for both of those people.
Well, and my fear was when it started going, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be so cheesy and awful.
Yeah,
I thought they were going to animate the characters, like the live-action characters. Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to make Mary Poppins like a cartoon, and I was like, oh God, this is gonna be so bad. But they didn't, and it was really cute, and I liked it. And you know, I like how it really took a lot of creativity to do what they did in that, even in that one scene. Well, it's a long scene, but that one segment, I suppose.
There's tons of creativity. The bowl scene was great, the bathtub imagination scene. Yeah. I love that.
Bathtub was really cute,
and it was really cute and fun. And the lamplighter dance. I mean, for a while I was like, well, this is really going on a long time.
I loved it.
But I couldn't get enough of it. I'm just like, keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah.
Is there, outside of the story, the bank story, did anything not work for you? Do you have any issues?
The kids were a little meh for me, but kids are often, you know, it's hard to get them to bring the same magic that you have. You have these top level performers like Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda who are just stealing the show for me. Mm-hmm. The songs are really great. And then you have these kids come in who are not to that same level of performing or singing. And it's like, oh, that's cute. But they're also like, it took me down a little bit. Like I was like, oh, I'm on a top notch. And now mm-hmm. I'm going to like bump down a little bit. So that kind of threw me off in the beginning because I was having a hard time kind of finding the middle ground between extreme excellence and kind of mediocre performances. Mm-hmm. But it finally kind of worked itself out. And I was like, you know what? It's like they're kids. I have to not overthink it so much. But I think they could have, I don't know. The kids were good. They just weren't great.
Yeah, really just the story is really the only thing that bugged me. We already talked about that. Last year, we had The Greatest Showman, and we were all singing that soundtrack. I'm still singing it. Was this as catchy as that?
No way. And that's the one thing that I was really bummed about because these types of movies have been really growing on me. I never used to like movies that incorporated musicals.
People are going to the bathroom and randomly breaking the song?
Yeah,
That's just weird when that happens. Why would you do that?
But with La La Land and then Greatest Showman and this, and there's been a couple others that have just been really enchanting. Mamma Mia,
Woods,
even.
Rob Marshall's Into the Woods was really good.
Yeah. And so these things have been really kind of, they're putting them into a modern sense, which I think has helped quite a bit for me because it's not old school musicals. But I was really hoping that this would be a movie where I can't get the songs out of my head. And when I left the movie, I'm not kidding you, I forgot the songs. I had to go back into Spotify before we recorded, listen to the songs over, because I was like, I don't remember which one stood out to me. When I listened to them, I remember. And, you know, when, you know, but then I'm like, oh, yeah.
But it wasn't like where you left and it was in your
where
head.
Where I had it stuck in my head. You know, now that I've re-listened to it, maybe it was just the night. I don't know. Now that I've re-listened to it, the one that sticks the most to me is Trip a Little Light Fantastic, because it's the easiest one to remember. I think
I really dug the Topsy Turvy one, too. That was a fun
song. That one, it was a really cute moment, too. But I think part of it, too, is Greatest Showman is doing full songs where you can sing the entire thing. Mm-hmm. Mary Poppins is breaking them. You have song, and then you have like actual discourse, conversation, and then you're back into song. So to kind of break it up like that is really hard to – it's not like a normal song that you're listening to. It's a segment of a song, and then we're back to normal conversation, and then a segment of a song. She kind of flows right. in and yeah. out. So that was – I think that's the biggest thing, is it's not as easy to cling on to it.
What was your favorite song overall?
The one that's the most memorable is the Trip a Little Light Fantastic, but I think my favorite one is the A Cover Is Not the Book, where Lin-Manuel Miranda and Emily Blunt are doing the performance together.
Okay.
And they're going through all of the different stories in the book or whatever. I think that was really, really great. And I love the cover is not the book. See, I don't even know the words, but I like the – it was catchy.
I really dug the Royal Doulton Music Hall one. It's I don't know why. I just like Emily Blunt saying it.
I don't even know which one that is. So I'm like, what scene is that?
When they're going to the Royal Doulton Music Hall where she sang that book song.
Oh, I don't remember a song leading there, though.
That's all right. She didn't actually see the movie, people. She just actually been making this whole thing up.
I saw it. See, that's what I'm saying. These songs aren't like, they don't stick to me. Maybe when I hear it, I can when I listen to the songs, I could place myself into it. Mm-hmm. But reading the song titles, I was like, I don't know which ones these are.
My favorite is Can You Imagine That? I really dug that
song. That was really cute.
Yeah, I really, 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 really dug that song. Then you have a cast that includes Colin Firth as bad guy. I mean, that should be his name, just bad guy. As soon as you see him, you're like, oh, he's a douche.
Yeah.
You know what? You got to have a douche
it's
in this
that mustache.
Movie. Mm-hmm. Yep. Meryl Streep, which was kind of a fun, you know, little bit yeah. part. And then appearances from Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury. Did anybody else take the shine off of Emily at all in a way? You know, where they came on screen and you're like, oh, nicely done.
Meryl Streep, really. I think she did a really great job. You know, Dick Van Dyke, he did a great job for a segment, but I wouldn't say that he stole away from Emily Blunt by any respect.
You know what? I'm going to stop you. I will say he did for that moment, because the fact that he does that little dance that he does, and now that I know that he did it, I was in awe a little bit.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's still not something I wouldn't place him like next to him.
I thought it had to be a CGI or a marionette or something. There's a guy.
I could tell that it was him, because his tap dancing when he was on top of the table didn't match the beats. He was a little bit
a little off.
Well, it wasn't off. He just didn't hit every tap of the song. Mm-hmm. And so you could tell that he was doing as much as he could. And it looked like he was really kind of, I don't know, pushing himself to do as much as he could. And he did a great job.
Cameo.
It was very fun. Yeah. But I don't know. I think I really enjoyed Lin-Manuel Miranda in this, to the point where I'm like,
well, he's not a cameo, though. He's like,
well,
a star.
Oh, yeah, you're true. Yeah. You're true. You're right.
I am true all the way through, through and through. We've talked about Emily Blunt and how she makes this movie pop. Here she is explaining why she took such an iconic role, including how director Rob Marshall talked her into it.
I read all of the books, and the books, which are set actually in the 30s, which is when our version is set, and during the Great Depression, darker, more profound backdrop, and she just leapt off the page at me. She is so enigmatic and batty and funny and vain and rude and all of these things that were like so delightful to play. He was so excited about it, and he really made sure I was aware, you know, this was Disney's most prized possession in many ways, and as it rightly should be. And so he just said, I really want to do it, and I only want to do it with you. And if you don't want to do it, then I may just find something else. Because he said, I see you And I was like, oh my God. Like, it was just so exciting and flattering and thrilling and scary. And everything that I sort of look for in taking on something new, because I knew it was going to be such a stretch. And I want to be a bit scared taking something on at this point.
Okay. That comes to the end of our spoiler. Anything else you want to mention about Mary Poppins Returns?
Yes.
Oh.
So I was watching, okay, two things. One is I was watching her on Emily Blunt on, was it Ellen? And they made her sing. She really did not want to, but she sang with the Backstreet Boys.
Okay.
It was really, really cute. But looking at her as just an individual, like as a normal Emily Blunt human being, and seeing how shy she was to sing in front of people, and then seeing her as Mary Poppins, like I was worried for Mary Poppins when I saw her because she was just so shy and like coy. She did a great job. Her voice was beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I was like, how is she going to like hold that confidence that Mary Poppins has? And looking at, I mean, she is, it really really speaks to her acting because she is a completely different person on screen for Mary Poppins. And I think if you just see how she is, and she was almost a little timid, and I'm like, this is, well, that's not Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing,
in real life. In yeah. Life, yeah.
And so seeing her take on this role and to do it with such, I mean, she really had full confidence. Like, she's like, I am Mary Poppins. And I love the character of Mary Poppins in general, where she's like, she uses her magic to get kids to do things that they don't want to do and kind of manipulates them into wanting to do them.
And also to teach them a life lesson.
Yeah, but even 12. Like taking a bath. Nobody wants to take a bath. And then she's like, oh, well, that's fine. And then she does like all of the, you know, the stuff starts to go down and then she takes stuff out. And
by the way, I had somebody, I don't know who it was. Somebody asked me, why are they wearing, you know, suits or whatever, getting in the bathtub? I'm like, do you want to see naked kids in this? This would just be
freaking weird. Yeah, that'd be weird.
God, let them. This is good for me. I'm good. I don't need any more. Trust me. It's all good.
The other thing was John Krasinski, who is Emily Blunt's husband, was when they went like family viewing and went to go see the release of it, the mm-hmm. premiere. And I guess he was in like full on tears when he saw her on screen because she was just like, she really, the magic of it. I don't even think he realized how great she could take this role on. And then he saw her on screen and I guess was in full tears. Like, she was just perfect.
Yeah, I can't see how she doesn't get an Oscar nomination.
Holy crap, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely. You know what I learned about her this year is because I always liked Emily Blunt. You know, Edge of Tomorrow and Devil Wears Prada, there's another, her and Meryl Streep were great in that together. I've always liked her and I've always appreciated her, but I've never really, I don't want to say I've never respected her because I've always enjoyed her performances, but I never respected her like to this level, I guess.
Right.
Seeing Quiet Place earlier this year and what she did there.
Oh, yeah.
And then contrast it with what she does here, which is polar opposite of that. I was already a fan, but I'm a fan to a new level now. Like I will watch whatever she does whenever she does it at this point because of this and Quiet Place.
I'm in the same boat as you. It wasn't ever something, I was like, oh, Emily Blunt, like, okay, I know what her name is and I've seen her in roles and she's been good, but it was never anything where I'm like, oh, Emily Blunt's in this movie, I have to go out and see it. And just like you said, with those two movies in the same year and just seeing how, I don't know, the variety.
Her depth.
Yeah, her depth.
Talent.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
She is wowing. And I cannot wait to see what else she's going to do. And I'm in the same boat as you. If she's coming out with a new movie, I'm going to be watching it.
She could do a movie on stamp collecting, and I'm going to be there, and I'm going to enjoy every minute of the stamps.
Can I say something that I think is really going to probably maybe make you mad, but also make people go,
sure.
I think if she continues on the path that she's on right now, she could be to the same level as Meryl Streep.
I could see that. I mean, this is seeing this year and seeing the variety and the complexity she played in both parts. Yeah, I could see that.
If she continues.
She has to make a lot of smart choices to keep going on Meryl's path, though.
Yeah.
Meryl's one of the – she's a rarity if I've ever seen one. Yeah. The woman has – I mean, from Devil Wears Prada to Topsy Turvy is just like not even in the same zip code. And she's willing to do it. So it's a little premature, but I could see the potential.
Right. It's just a matter of if she were to continue on this path.
All right. If $10 is full price of admission, what do you give Mary Poppins Returns?
$8.
Okay. I give it $7 Because I, again, the movie as a whole, every time she's gone, not so good. Not mm-hmm. as good. But when she's there, it poppins. I'm going to say it one more. I'm just going to keep doing it. And eventually, I'm hoping it catches on.
I don't think it
It'll
will.
It'll be a hashtag.
It's not going to be.
Hashtag poppins. No, wait. That probably is a hashtag.
I was
going
to say that's already a hashtag. And it's not to credit of you.
But I'm going to take it anyway. So thanks for making that a thing because of me. Appreciate that, world. All right. Now it's time to move into Bumblebee.
You're so cheesy.
People of Earth, we are Decepticon peacekeepers patrolling the galaxy.
What are you doing? This is humiliating.
We believe a dangerous criminal from our world is hiding somewhere on yours. There's a war raging on our planet. If B-127 isn't found, that war may find its way here.
Okay, now we're moving on to Bumblebee. John and I caught Bumblebee, the latest attempt to save the Transformers franchise. You probably didn't know it needed saving, but they did. And this one goes a little different. Instead of Rock'em Sock'em Robots, we have E.T. with Transformers. Set in 1987, Haley Steinfeld stars as Charlie, a young girl who has recently lost her father and her inner light. She's a mechanic like her dad, and she's desperate to repair her father's car when frustration leads her to an old bug. What happens next is that bug happens to be Bumblebee. And that's after his unfortunate voice incident, which we finally get to know what that voice incident was, which means they can't speak and everything. The two become fast friends before having to fend off both an irrational government and a pair of rowdy Decepticons dead set on information Bumblebee has on the location of Optimus Prime. Directed by Travis Knight, this is meant to be a soft reboot of the Transformers. John, you were adamantly against any more Transformers movies. First off, why were you kind of done with Transformers?
I was done with Transformers. I got tired of Transformers being an excuse to just do Rock'em Sock'em Robots with explosions and fancy cars and then half-naked teenage girls. I really reached my limit of stupidity when it came to that. I didn't think I was gonna ever be driven to a point where I said no mas. When it came to those things, but
you're a big fan,
thank
right?
you, Michael Bay, you got me there.
Yeah, because you're a big fan, right? You love Transformers, like it's a.
I think I could say that Transformers means more to me than even Star Wars does.
Really,
I can't even like come up with more words to say as to why I meant it, but it really was like it's bigger to me than like Star Wars ever was.
Did this? I got that. You said it three times. Did this?
Yeah.
Save the franchise for you then? I mean, are you back on board with Transformers?
I am. I'm mad at it and I'm irritated and I really hate the fact that those movies existed, especially when you come to the idea that this movie was made and made so well. So yeah, I am back on board.
Why is this different? Okay, so here's what I can't understand, because to me, I'm not as avid a fan of Transformers as a series. I love the first movie. Hated the second movie, liked the third and fourth movie, and then didn't like the last movie. So, you know, I'm all over the place when it comes to Transformers. But as a kid, that wasn't really my cartoon. I'm more Spider-Man, G.I. Joe, that kind of stuff. Why is this movie so much better than the other Transformers movies? I mean, I don't see a huge difference except for maybe family and heart, I guess, to a degree.
And that's what it is for me. This movie has heart. Not to say that this is a great movie, but one of the things it does very well is it has a heart to it. It has feeling and it has emotion, and those other movies didn't have it. And for anyone who thinks that Transformers never really had heart, don't remember what that Transformers movie did to you back in 87 when it came out.
Oh, because that's the one where Prime dies, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. That ruined some childhoods. So yeah. Do you think that's all that's really here that people are latching onto? Like, it's just the heart that's really getting people excited about the franchise again?
I think it is, because it's a sign that they can grow from Rock'em Sock'em's Robot or to explosions with boobs. It's a sign they can grow away from that. I mean, you have Haley Steinfeld, who is a beautiful girl and a wonderful actress, but at no moment do you sit there and leer at her like you do the other actresses throughout the entire movie, all the other movies. You're leering at some girl who's supposed to be a teenager. That doesn't happen with Haley.
That's true. I didn't even really think about that, but you don't have someone over-sexualized here.
Right.
Well, they even did that in where it was his daughter, Mark Wahlberg's daughter. They had her all sexed up.
Yeah, that was weird. Running around with my daughter, and she's looking like wearing like a truck stop waitress's outfit.
I don't know what that meant, but I'm pretty sure you just offended a few truck stop waitresses. But good job. So,
or like pissed them off to the point. Wait, I don't dress like that. My butt doesn't fit in those shorts.
So the story here is very much. I mean, I was thinking about it, and even though this is kind of a spoiler cast, and all spoilers are open. I really don't know if there's anything I can spoil for this movie. It's really by the numbers. So the fact that it's speaking to people has more to do with how it's made than what it does, because it doesn't really do anything we haven't seen before. It's just a matter of Haley is very relatable. She's very relatable. Mm-hmm. You know, she's really struggling with her dad being dead, and you can tell she's angsty, a little angry, and just trying to find something to believe in again, and that's what Bumblebee kind of brings to her. We get a little bit of the one thing I was kind of looking forward to was hearing the backstory to how Bumblebee lost his voice.
Right.
And pay attention, Star Wars, aka Solo. This is how you explain something that people actually want to know about, instead of just hammering, hey, where'd he get his name? Here we go. Let's make a scene. You know, this actually answered questions people asked, as opposed to shit no one cared about. It does a really solid job of all those things. I don't think it brings anything new to the franchise, except the heart that you talked about that was sorely lacking from every other Transformers movie.
It's you take E.T., you take Herbie the Love Bug, you smash them together, you get Harry and the Hendersons meets E.T.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. It's just that formulaic. But where this movie does come in is, yeah, the heart and the delivery of some of the lines rescues some of the problems with the script, I think.
Well, and it does a thing where it parses down the amount of villains, which I think is very important. It's always so hard to follow the other Transformers movies. Like, who are these? Who is that? Who is that? Who is this? I don't know who all these freaking robots are. It's hard to keep track of who they are. There's so many of them flying around and crashing into each other, and it's more about special effects than it is telling any kind of story. I understood everything that was happening in this movie, which is more than I can say about the last four Transformers movies. Like, there was always a point in each one of those where I'm like, what the hell is going on? Who cares about the AllSpark? I don't care. Why is that thing still a thing? Ugh.
Yep. But, you know, that's the thing that's also very different is the look of the Transformers in this. I mean, there is some similarities to the other movies, but at the same time, those other movies, like the villains were this, they were like print, they were like just stamped out models just thrown out there. I got a model for this. I got a model for that. Let's just keep reusing these models for the villains. This, each character that was animated had its own look, and it looked solid and looked great. And even the transformations looked better in this than they did in the other set of movies. It looked much more thorough and not just like, here's a mess of metal just like spinning around doing something. Mm-hmm. It really, like, as you watch the transformations happen, it makes more, it's more legible and more realistic to a degree.
And faster.
Yeah.
There were points in the last couple of movies where it felt like it took a good minute before they finally transform. It's like, damn it, will you get there? I don't care about how many gears you show and how impressive this is. It's taking way too long, man. Just be a robot or be a car. Get there. Let's go. And this one gets there a lot faster because it's more concerned with actually telling some kind of a story. How did you feel about John Cena as Joe generic government operative?
Agent Burns. Yeah. I really appreciated John Cena being in this movie because he delivered lines in a great way that really just like it was cheesy. It was bad, but if it wasn't Cena saying them, it would have been worse. So he really brought a lot of charm to the movie. Like even like he had a great moment where they're deciding the government's deciding whether or not they're going to work with the Decepticons, and he's just like, "Hey, stupid! Their name is Decepticons. It's in their name. Am I the only one seeing this?"
Yeah, that was really funny. Like, how many times do they need to tell you they are bad news all the way across the board? Was there anything that didn't work for you in this one?
That's what's interesting, because there is a couple of things that I like. There's nothing that stuck with me, but I know through the movie I was like, why do they say that? Like, why do they choose to do that? but I didn't like walk away with those movies, walk away from the movie remembering it. They did a good job making me forget those points where I had an issue. So not that I want to say it's perfect, because it's not, because I do remember saying, huh, that's a weird choice, or that's a bad decision. But it was also okay, because they bought a lot of favor with everything else they were doing.
I had one issue, and this is becoming a serious movie issue for me, and that is anytime in a movie when somebody says, let's do this, I just want to throw popcorn at the screen. And I'm literally at the point where I want to take my pop or soda, depending on which part of the country you live in, and just chuck it at the screen. I'm so sick of let's do this. Guess what? Anytime you're going into some big action thing, this is the heroic moment. Come up with something better to say than let's do this. Because, and I've heard it twice this week, because the new Men in Black trailer, international trailer, came out with Hemsworth. And they say that at that point, and at one point in that trailer. And I'm just like wanting to throw my drink at my phone because I'm watching it on my phone. I'm sick to death of hearing that, because no, you write for money. Think of something else. This has been done 6,000 times.
Money.
God. So they say that at one point in this movie, and I'm just like, oh, that was the only moment where I really didn't enjoy the film at all. I was just like, God, not again. Not again.
Oh my God. Do you know who played the sheriff in this movie?
No, who?
Hunter. Fred Dreyer.
That was Fred Dreyer?
That was Fred Dreyer.
Whoa. Man. Everybody listening going, what's a Hunter? That was a TV show on NBC in the 80s. That was a long time ago. Fred Dreyer has been, he's been laying low. Works for me.
Yeah.
Works for me. That was like his big thing. All right. Would you rather see more movies like this? I mean, going back to different time periods with a different Autobot, or what do you want to see like going forward from this franchise now that we've gotten this?
Like this. Yeah, I want to see more stories like this. I want to see folk more centric or more focused on a single or maybe a pair of Autobots versus everybody. As much as it was great to see this movie's version of, like, the crazy thing is when you see them on Cybertron. So the other movies, they're like, Ironhide's here, and Ironhide looks like an awesome big black truck, but that's not what Ironhide looks like in the cartoon. But in the movie, this movie, when you can see Ironhide in the background. He looks like Ironhide, and it looks awesome. Ratchet looks like Ratchet. It looks awesome. You got Wheeljack, and he's got the stupid freaking light things on the side of his head, and he looks like Wheeljack with the face shield. Optimus Prime, of all people, has a face shield. He doesn't have the weird freaking gorilla lips. I mean, every single character that you remember from the cartoons is depicted exactly as they are in the cartoons, and it's viable. Like, you got Ravage jumps out of Soundwave's chest. And Soundwave sounds like Soundwave, and Shockwave is in this, and he's got the big ass gun. All of it is awesome. It looks great. I forgot what was the point I was going on. What was it again?
I don't know what we want to see in the future. I don't know. You got so excited. You just kept talking about
it. I got so excited. Yes, I want to see more of like stories like this, and I want to see like centered around maybe one or two, or maybe at most three Autobots. Nothing like in a whole army versus army kind of thing. Let's keep it simpler and tell those kinds of stories.
Now, because they separate at the end of the movie, they separate. They go their separate ways. Do you want, because if this movie does well, which, you know, the holidays will tell that tale. Do you want to see another Bumblebee movie? And would you want Hailee Steinfeld in there? Because I would. I really think she's actually a very good actress. She really is. And she doesn't get enough quality roles, I don't think, yet. Hopefully this will change that. But do you want to see more of you want to see another Bumblebee movie? And do you want Hailee Steinfeld in it?
The next movie has to be a different robot. Do I want to see another Bumblebee movie in the future? Yes. Not right away, though, because I don't want to continuously go after Bumblebee, because that'll get boring, I think, in my mind. Mm-hmm. But another Bumblebee movie with Hailee Steinfeld in it would be great.
Okay. Good enough. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Bumblebee?
$6.50.
Okay. And I am at the same place. Man, this is like we're lining up, buddy. $6.50. I'm with you.
They don't know that yet.
You know what? We're giving you a premonition. Aquaman, we might be in line for that too. So pay, keep listening. Keep listening. I actually, you know, as much as I enjoyed it, I didn't think – this is where you have to understand Rotten Tomatoes as an aggregator, because I know it's at like 93% for Bumblebee, and I don't think right. it's like a 9 out of 10 movie, but that's – it's an aggregator. It just means like 93% of the critics liked it or better, and we liked it.
Well, you know, and you'll find out in the future how I really feel, but of the weekend's movies, this was not the better movie. Let's say that.
No, no. In fact, the better movie is coming up right now. It's time for Aquaman, baby. Yeah.
Together, they were the greatest empire the world had ever seen. Now, sit on Atlan's throne, shackled by archaic laws and politics, while the threat above us grows undeniable.
Violence has always plagued the surface. They will destroy themselves.
Not before destroying us first. We have been hiding long enough. The time has come for Atlantis to rise again.
All right, now let's dive into DC's latest hero, Aquaman, and see how many water puns we can break out in a single episode. Joining me for this portion is John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. I am wet all over and good for it.
And sad Brian Williams.
And I'm fairly moist myself here after seeing this movie.
Are we all a little sad that the word moist never came up in Aquaman? Because I feel like it should have.
For the sure cringe factor, it should have happened.
And maybe have Willem Dafoe say moist.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's equally creepy. All right. Well, here's what Aquaman's about. Born a son to an underwater queen, played by Nicole Kidman, and a human, Arthur Curry learns he is destined to rule the underwater kingdom of Atlantis. Along the way, he must challenge his brother Orm and fend off the villainous Manta. For this section, we're going to debate Arthur Curry's journey toward his rightful place as king, Jason Momoa, his entry into the DC universe as Aquaman, Amber Heard's hair, Patrick Wilson's flair, and James Wan's direction. So we're here, guys. Aquaman. Spoilers in 2 minutes, but before we get there, in two sentences, if you can manage that, give me your overall spoiler-free take of Aquaman. Now that we've seen it, the hype is done, you've actually witnessed the movie. Brian, you're a guest. Go first.
All right. I have my issues with some of the little things of the movie. Little details. I have some issues with the details. However, the movie as a whole was very enjoyable, very fun.
Okay. John?
Jason Momoa brought the charm. Amber Heard brought the just good enough and the story and everything else. And it was beautiful and fun to watch.
I think it's one of the most visually creative movies of the year. And Jason Momoa is fantastic. So, yeah, that's my thought. Now, Nicole Kidman, less. So, let's go to the rest of it. All right. People bitched about Batman versus Superman. They laughed at Justice League. Two movies we all really dug for the most part. So, did you leave the theater a little happier at the thought of future DC movies, or a little depressed because they're obviously going closer to the Marvel vein?
All right. Well, I was happier that it was a brighter and less gloomy movie than most of these other DC movies have been. They're so dark and dreary.
Were you tired of that?
What, three or four movies? Yeah. I need a little change of pace.
Well, Wonder Woman was a little light. I thought Justice League was light too. Really? I mean,
light moments, but it's still obviously Bats versus Supes was really dark.
Right.
So everything from that was a little bit better, but there was not a clear, very strong departure from that. And this is the first one that I feel is, even though it does take place really deep in the ocean and it's dark, it's still overall, the vibe, the feel, the tone was a lot lighter than some of the others, most of the others, all of the others, really.
I was really happy when I left the theater because I just thought, hey, this is a step in the right direction. It's not quite Marvel-y in the sense of like there is a little bit of language in it. That's fine and that's fun. And like the kind of hero that they're depicting is a hero that I don't think Marvel would use. I don't think they would use somebody who's like purposely tattooed up the way they did. So I was happy. And if they keep going in this direction where it kind of walks that line between light and maybe more adulty, I'll be okay with that. Yeah, let's not say dark. Let's just say more adulty.
Yeah, I don't think they would have a beer chugging hero at all. Which
no,
totally well, feels like Thor. That's a Momoa edition. That doesn't really feel like anything I saw in Aquaman comics. from any
but
point.
Thor was a beer chugging hero.
Oh, okay, that's true. And this is
one movie. We saw. Well,
he chugs beer in Ragnarok. He chugs beer in his own movies. But yeah, he does. He chugs beer.
Wow, you're really writing this down, huh?
Wow, that's some in-depth research.
I just didn't know Aquaman liked beer. It really felt like this is a Momoa addition to the canon, so to speak.
Well, this is not comics related. This is more like the Warner Brothers animation related. The Throne of Atlantis, which I'll talk to in about more deeply. There's actually a whole section of that cartoon, which is it's the Justice League meets Aquaman cartoon of the WB house. And it's very well done. But yeah, he gets like the first time we meet Aquaman, he's drunk in that.
Huh.
And that's super like super pale, super blonde, blue eyed Aquaman. Not a Samoan.
It's just the different change. I dig it though. I like Jason Momoa. You know, and we should probably, you know, just get right into Jason Momoa because there are people that say he was miscast because he's not the blonde haired, blue eyed Aquaman. But I gotta say, this is for me. The one hero I never wanted to see on screen because every comic I've ever read, I laugh out loud. And I know some people, well, he's a god. He's great. Da, da, da. He talks to the fishes. Yeah. Every comic I've ever read of Aquaman made me laugh. It's just not a cool hero to me. That's a personal opinion. I'm not knocking you if it's like your favorite of all time and you've got Aquaman underwear and all that other bullshit. I personally am not an Aquaman fan. This movie made me a fan of Aquaman. Justice League already, you know, wet the whistle a little bit, but this one really got me moist.
Did this one sate you?
Yes, a little bit. Yeah. What about you guys? I mean, does Momoa it's hard to say his name three times real fast. Does Momoa win you over? I mean, does he sell this part more than anybody else could have? I can't think of anybody that's going to make this part work otherwise.
Yeah. I've always liked Aquaman. I actually, as a little kid, had Aquaman under ruse. Yes.
As a little kid, like last week?
As a little kid. Like a couple of weeks ago, I just ordered them on Amazon.
Warm but, the movie. Showed yeah, everybody in the audience. Look at these.
So, I've always liked them. I just always wanted to ride them, whatever. A couple of dolphins, you know, standing 1 foot on each dolphin with the little harness, like in the cartoons, you know. But Jason Momoa really brings a swag that is pretty much lacking in just about every other comic book character that we've seen in the movies. And he's one of those. Yes, it is one of those departures from the roles, but this is one of those roles that it affords some flexibility. There are certain characters to where they have to be pretty much just like the comic books for whatever reasons. And this is one to where it affords some flexibility. And with his heritage, there is that kind of connection with the sea a little bit more than some pasty blonde headed guy. So, yeah, it works.
He works for me a lot, too. And that has a lot to do with just who he is in general. I'm almost afraid to say that he was acting in this because in some parts, sure, he's acting. But there's a lot of parts where it seems like it's more really him. Like the parts where he's kind of goofy and smiling and winks at the camera kind of thing. That seems more like it's him. And he is an important factor in what makes the role work. So I don't want to say I don't think anyone would be able to make it work because... So you have the King of Atlantis, which let's just call him Neptune, and then you have Thor back to back, and they have the same sort of swagger to them, the same sort of ability to kind of drop that massive stature they have and be much more personable. And I think that's why Momoa works better than anybody could have, with the exception of maybe Hemsworth. Hemsworth and him will probably be able to play Aquaman just as well for the same sort of reasons, as long as they're given the same sort of rope, you know?
I just thought, I mean, there's a lot of bad dialogue in the movie. I'll be the first to say it. Some of the dialogue, pretty weak. But he makes the lines that he has where I know if someone else said them, I would be rolling my eyes right off the side of my head, probably onto the floor and out of the auditorium. He says them, and I'm like, that's funny.
that's exactly true. I had that same effect where I'm like, oh, no, it's all right. If anybody else said it any other way, that would be bad.
Well, and what do we need to do at this point to get a Momoa and Hemsworth buddy movie?
Men in Black.
Yeah, Momoa can show up. He can show up randomly in Men in Black International, because he's not going to be showing up. They can't be together in any comic book form, because Marvel and DC will see to that. Like, no, this is our Momoa. That's our Hemsworth. Right. You know, that sort of thing. I can't imagine that. He did have a swagger to him. And I do think it's interesting to make the character kind of follow Momoa's heritage, his own heritage. I thought that was really an interesting choice, because they could have just not said anything about it. You know, they could have played off that and just got a random dark-haired guy as opposed to someone who actually follows his own family heritage. I thought that was kind of cool, because you're changing the character type and no one complained about it, because it works, you know, with the actor. It really worked. So it was interesting. Too much exposition? Was there too much exposition in terms of, I mean, they explain a lot of Aquaman, and I didn't even know he had this much backstory. I really thought he just woke up and he was king.
This was your atypical first movie for a superhero. Yeah, they did explain a lot of his background, and I think some people might have enjoyed it if they didn't know that much about Aquaman. But with the base knowledge that I have of him, like, I've kind of felt like I was seeing a movie I'd seen before of his, only told slightly differently.
I just thought it was way too much. I actually dozed off. During one of
did you really?
During Willem Dafoe's history lesson or whatever it was, he went on for a little bit in his little, him and his little top knot or whatever it was. I nodded off. I did. I was, yeah, kind of a, not, I don't want to say ashamed to say, but yeah, I hate that I fell asleep. I was just bored with all the talking. It's not really engaging, like, kind of like to your point earlier, it's not exactly the most engaging of dialogue to begin with.
No. So, and that top knot wasn't that great either. And no. A lot of people are wearing them in this movie. Willem Dafoe, Patrick Wilson. The only one that should be wearing a man bun-esque look is Momoa. Because
nobody wear a man bun. Nobody. I don't care if you live above or below the water, the surface.
I suppose. I think it worked on Momoa. He just, I don't think that beard. Can we talk about the beard? Why does he have that beard? The dude is like, I mean, he is chiseled. He almost looks like Superman when he's fully shaved. Here he looks like, I don't know, Sons of Anarchy extra.
I think it works. I mean, he's really, everybody else has got the chiseled jaw and the smooth skin, and he's a little bit different than that. So,
yeah, it accentuates the fact that he's slightly different from everybody else in Atlantis.
Slightly? I mean, he's completely slightly different. Patrick Wilson's like this. He is the blonde hair blue. He almost is what Aquaman is in the comics. And then you got Momoa shimmying and shaking about, coming in and, you know, starting a war. Stopping a war. All right. So I didn't think there was too much exposition. I actually had this conversation with people when I left. This is a long movie. I don't like long movies. I think, Brian, I know you're a fan of 90 minutes or less. That's really where you think the sweet spot should be. Oh, I'm sorry. Nope, over nope. 90 minutes, but under 2 hours, right?
I don't have a cap on the length of the movie.
Okay, well, I shouldn't speak for you then.
But the 90-minute rule, way more often than not, if it's less than 90 minutes, it's a fairly bad movie.
Okay.
It's science.
But if it's over 2 hours,
science. He's done a study. I have charts and bar graphs and everything ready to show you.
Due to independent studies by government researchers.
That's what we were doing when we were waiting for the robots to get to Mars.
No, but I mean, I agree. I think movies can be stretched out to, but the Lord of the Rings extended versions, I can watch those all day.
You have to watch those all day.
Literally does take all day to watch one, but it's they work. There's enough there going on. Some movies don't need to be stretched out to be 2.5 hours.
Well, I was never bored, man. I'll be perfectly honest. I was never bored. I never fell asleep. Shame on you, by the way. I want to bring that up one more time. You should be ashamed of yourself. Never bored. I was engaged the whole time. I saw it in 3D. Did you guys see it in 3D?
I did. Okay. And it was maybe the best 3D movie that I've seen in a couple of years.
Well, least. And you slept through some of it. Imagine if you had seen the whole thing.
Well, it was the talkie-talkie.
Talkie-talkie, sucky-sucky.
Oh, hey.
No, there was none of the sucky-sucky.
A whole other kind of moist.
Oh, shit. We're off the rails. All right. Amber Heard. Now, this is somebody that I was concerned about. Not a fan. I've talked on previous episodes that she is to acting what Miles Teller is to acting. Yeah. Which is...
not good.
Not good. Mediocre at best, but never really good unless somebody's great next to them. Yeah, I'm talking about Whiplash. I mean, really, if it wasn't for J.K. Simmons, come on, he's not that good. So Amber Heard is somebody who's never been very good to me in anything. Very concerned about her.
She's never been good to me either.
Did she work for you in this one? Did you like her here?
Well, the thing I could say is that she proves that anyone at this point can play Mara. And
wow, what a compliment.
It's a tour.
At the same time, I didn't need anyone else to play her. It was just like anyone, like if you spun a wheel and like it was a rotating list of people, like it could be anybody in the costume of Mara. However, she did not distract from the movie. So she wasn't so bad that she distracted from the movie. And that's, I appreciate that part.
Yeah, that's pretty much my same sentiment. I was just kind of going to go with adequate. She didn't detract from it. She didn't add anything. Kind of like parsley.
She's a garnish. She's a lovely garnish.
It just sits there. It makes the dish look better, but you know, it's just there. I don't really use it.
I mean, does Momoa need parsley?
I just kept thinking she was Ariel from The Little Mermaid the whole time. That's all I kept thinking about.
Was the hair distracting for you guys? Like how red it was?
Every now and then.
Yeah, not for me. It looked very comic book aligned, so I was fine with it. Like her character, she looked like her character, so it was fine.
She did not bother me at all. There were moments, God forgive me. There were actually at least 3 moments, I counted them, where I went, "Hey, she's pretty good." And then something else happened. I'm like, "Oh, that's who she was. I forgot. It's Amber Heard." But
right.
I thought she actually handled the action scenes pretty well. She had a couple moments where she was giving a fiery retort, and I think it worked well. The love story, not at all. That never worked for me.
Yeah.
That was so forced. It was like, what's going on? Is a splash? I don't understand what's going on in this respect. But yeah, overall, she never once bothered me. I was actually kind of surprised with how decent she did. I wouldn't say that she excelled, but she held her... Yeah, she didn't rival Momoa, so I wouldn't say she held her own. She held up her end of the bargain.
She excelled her normal Amber Heardness. How's that?
Yeah, there you go. She out-herded herself.
out-herded her herd.
All right. Now we move on to this is my favorite casting choice because Patrick Wilson, I think, is in every James Wan movie. They're besties to some degree. What did you think about his take on Orm? And I especially, after the movie's over, it's very evident that he's not quite the villain he was throughout the movie. I mean, because, you know, at the end, Aquaman looks at him. He's like, "Hey, when you're ready, let's talk." That says to me it's very much like a Loki thing where he's going to give him another chance to redeem himself. And I actually didn't think he was completely off his rocker the whole movie because when you see all the pollution and you know in the real world we do pollute the seas like that, I kind of get where he's coming from in a way. What do you guys think of Orm?
Honestly, the first few scenes, I thought they CGI'd a younger version of William Hurt. That's who I thought it was for like the first 20 minutes or whatever of the movie. It was like, oh, wait a minute. That's actually Patrick Wilson.
I can see that.
So yeah. It was weird because every time he talked, it always ended with him screaming to nobody other than Willem Dafoe. It's just like why are you screaming all the time? Why? You don't need to end every statement with a scream. Stop.
Can you do that underwater? I don't even know if you can scream underwater. It's already stretched to talk, right?
Well, they just let them talk this time. Instead of Justice League where they had to separate make a bubble or a whatever the opposite of a whirlpool or something is, some spread the water out so they could have a conversation.
But otherwise, you have 2.5 hours of.
Yeah. I mean, imagine what that big fight scene would have been like. Holy cow, that would have been ugly. I don't know. I liked him, and I do like you say, the kind of the change towards the end that he might come around to be a more supportive character. That's interesting. I like that, and that he wasn't just bad. I didn't, but he had his reasons, and as misguided as they were. But
I mean, he wanted to kill his brother. I don't know if I dug that part, and he was all. I mean. Man, and he's like reliving his mom's journey where his wife or his dad's journey where his wife's leaving him, or soon to be wife is leaving him for some other earth dweller. I'd be pissed too.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say. They kind of hinted it can go either direction, but I highly doubt it's going to, because his reaction to Nicole Kidman being on Aquaman's side was not great, because he was all like, "Wait, you're taking his side over mine?" Mom. And yeah, mom's taking my older brother's side, and I'm just a little guy.
My girl leaves me. My mom don't. She picked my other brother.
Right, you know. So all those things to say that they left it making it seem like I had, but nah, no. Ocean Master is going to Ocean Master his way out of this. So
it's a dumb title, by the way. Like, really dumb title. Every time they said that out loud, I chuckled under my breath. I'm like. I wouldn't even want the job. It'd be like, hey, Peterson, you can be an Ocean Master. No, I'm good. I can't tell that with a straight face to my friends. What's your job title? Ocean Master. Oh, well, la-dee-da. Look at the big brain on Brad. I couldn't handle
it. Sounds like the name of a fishing pole instead of a big time ruler of the oceans.
Right. It's what you called your grandpa when he took you down the river.
Jokingly, as.
As he like almost sank the boat several times. Ocean Master's got us again.
Ocean Master parked the boat up on the dock again. Nice. Should have been beside the dock in the water, but he left it on the dock.
Did you notice the music? This was kind of fun. The music cues was like dun dun dun. You know, that was there's a lot of music cues like that whenever villains were present. It's kind of funny.
Yep.
The other villain is Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who played Black Manta. Okay, I didn't know anything about this villain, so I'm watching this. I actually thought, I mean, he might have been over the top a couple times with this menacing look. But overall, I really kind of dug the villain. I didn't dig the helmet. The helmet was absolutely ridiculous. Not as ridiculous as Orm's helmet at the end. That should have been stopped in its tracks. That was horrible. But the black man...
Why did it move with his face?
I don't know. That's a good question. We should probably write somebody about that. But the Black Manta helmet, what did you guys – I mean, what do you think about Manta? Was he a solid villain, John? Are you a fan of this character? And he's obviously coming back because of the Stinger.
Yeah, I'm a solid fan of this character. I mean, he is great. He looks exactly like he looks in the comics and the cartoons, and he's just as ruthless as he is in those – in those arenas. So I'm happy with the way they've depicted him. He is maybe a turn away from the way he is in some of the animations, because for those who don't know, Calderon, who's Aqualad in the comics and in the cartoons, is actually supposed to be his son. So I don't know if they're going to do something where, like, maybe Calderon is another half Atlantean, half human, or if they're going to bother with him at all. But that was the one thing that I thought was weird.
Aqualad?
Yes.
That's like the name? Do they throw these by a committee to say, hey, what do you guys think of Ocean Master? What do you think of Aqualad? Nobody vetoes these? Well, I mean,
you've also got, like, as far as the Justice League, their version of Mr. Fantastic is a guy named Elongated Man.
Elongated, yeah.
Elongated Man, yeah. It's just...
Well, they have two of those, because they have Plastic Man and Elongated Man.
There you go. That's right, yeah. One wasn't one bad one wasn't enough. They had to have two,
and one of them is getting their own movie.
Yep, great.
I know Plastic Man is, but I would rather see Elongated Man just so I could tell people I was going to see that, and they looked at me.
He's
like,
on the Flash.
What? The Elongated Man is?
Elongated Man's on the Flash.
Do they call him that?
Watching that show a couple years ago.
Yeah, me too.
They call him. I haven't watched this season yet, but they call him Elongated Man.
They should not. Seriously,
it's so hard to say. It takes too long to say it. Right. Oh, that is funny. That is what a horrible name. No, I liked Manta though. I liked him with the mask on, because I liked the helmet. It did it was very similar to the older versions of it that I remember him from, maybe like the Super Friends, Legion right. of Doom days. Mm-hmm. But it was modernized. I didn't care for the actor. I thought he was fairly weak as his pathos or whatever was mm-hmm. his motivation for hating everybody and hating Aquaman. It was a little too cliche, I guess. I didn't feel the actual hurt that he was trying to portray.
Not to disagree, but I actually bought into that, and I bought into Arthur's story later on.
I guess that is disagreeing, isn't it?
That's absolutely. I don't want to disagree, but I'm totally going to say something.
I'm totally going to.
Completely opposite stance than you are.
Right. I don't want to disagree, but I'm just going to go for it. So, I understood that a lot more, especially when Arthur is sitting there going, you know what, that Manta guy. That's totally on me. That's my fault because I could have helped his dad and really just changed this whole situation. But I created my own villain by not saving his father.
Mm. I don't think he created it. I mean, that's still – I got where Aquaman was coming from. It's on him. You're bad.
Well, yeah, I got where he's coming from. But he could have just as easily stopped it as he did let it happen.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, for a second there, I was kind of that, look, you are the good guy. You're supposed to help people no matter what. And then like 2 seconds later, I'm like, yeah, you did just murder a bunch of people and basically tried to kill me pretty, you know, in a couple of bad ways. So, mm-hmm. You kind of deserve what you get.
I mean, he did do the right thing the first time. He was walking away and climbing up a ladder. And then his dad was stupid enough to try and shoot at him. That's your fault.
Right.
Man. Yep.
Well, I'm not saying that they're not the victim of their own moronity, but, I am saying he could have fixed it.
Can we talk about the daddy issues? Why is this a movie full of people with daddy issues? Every single person has a daddy issue of some sort.
Aquaman doesn't. His dad's alive and doing well. They go drinking together.
It's a different kind of daddy issue. He's got a stepdaddy issue. Because, you know, he's mad at them for executing his mom, which didn't happen. You know, his son.
That's not stepdaddy. That's just
vengeance. Yeah, that's just. Well, that's not really a daddy issue.
More of a mommy issue, really.
Okay. Well, they have parent issues. Can I rephrase it then? They all have issues with their parents, and that's what's driving them to do everything that they're doing.
I mean, don't we?
Maybe. Don't kill whatever random point I was trying to make that I don't even know what I was trying to make, but I was trying to make.
Where are we going right now, Aaron?
I don't know. You know what?
Show us on the doll where your parents hurt you.
Let's talk about this then. We've got Nicole Kidman, we've got Willem Dafoe, we've got Dolph Lundgren, who was really good in a freaking DC movie.
Not that hair though.
No. Woo! hair was bad.
That was the worst hair I've seen since Nicolas Cage in Con Air. That
easy. I don't that think was it was bad. No, not quite. Well, first yes. of all,
not that bad, but first it of was all, animated, so
Nicolas Cage's hair was fantastic in Con Air. It inspired people. It inspired people to not quit.
Inspired people to get haircuts. Going, they look in the mirror and go, "My shit is unruly. This is the end of the mullet era right here."
What did you get? Did any of these three stand out? Because they're all kind of big actors in different respects. Were you surprised? Did any of them work great or not work great? Nicole Kidman was a big surprise to me that she's even here. Because I feel like this movie would be one of those movies where she gets the script and goes, no, we're not going to.
Hard pass. Thank you. Me and my Botox will be right over here doing our own thing.
Wow, he went there.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Any more facelifts out of her, she's going to have a mustache.
She's going to start shaving. Yeah. She's going to have a goatee. Anywho, I really liked her. I liked Willem Dafoe and Dolph Lundgren. Like all of them. Like I know you're hinting at some sort of issue with Nicole Kidman, but I thought she was great, and I thought Dolph Lundgren was fun, and Willem Dafoe is always awesome. So I was okay with all of it.
Two out of three. I was actually pleased with Nicole Kidman and Dolph. I didn't like Willem Dafoe in this one. I love Willem Dafoe as an actor. He does usually bring a lot. I just didn't care for him in this role. I can't even put my finger on it. there was a something that kind of was a little distracting, and it just didn't feel like it was a proper fit.
Was the nod on his head?
Was it the CG smoothing of his face when they show a younger version of him?
That was creepy.
Maybe. So creepy. Maybe it was the top knot that I got a problem with. I don't.
Maybe you just don't like top knots. Maybe they just set you off. You're like, damn it, bitch! I can't have one of those.
I can't have one. So maybe that's just it. It's just jealousy. Maybe that's just all it is. But you know, if you whatever
grow your
beard it is,
out long just, enough and just like tie it up behind your head, you can have a top knot.
I may work on that. No, but speaking of, you mentioned how Nicole Kidman, this might be a movie that's below her, but what about Julie Andrews? She was the big Kraken think monster at the end of it.
Oh, yeah, but she was just a voice.
Yeah, but still, she's in a comic. She's in an Aqua. Julie Andrews is in an Aquaman movie.
That's true. And she passed on Mary Poppins Returns. For a second. She passed on a cameo in Mary Poppins Returns to do a voice in Aquaman.
Right. That comes out the same weekend as each other.
That's so funny.
That's not a comment against Mary Poppins in any way, shape, or form, is it?
Mm-mm. No. Sounds like it, though. That you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people in here that when I first found out all of these people, except Dolph Lundgren, I mean, let's face it, he'll take the job. The other ones, as soon as I heard that they were cast in this, and I'm like, what? And then I heard Julie Andrews did a cameo. I didn't know where it was. So I was watching through the whole movie going, when does Julie Andrews pop up? And it wasn't until after the movie that I realized that was her voice. I really didn't tell just from the voice, or like from hearing it.
No.
Because I hadn't heard it in so long. So I went and looked it up to see who the voice was. And I'm like, holy Christ, that was Julie Andrews? Wow. It was fascinating. I was alluding to earlier, not that Nicole Kidman was bad. I was alluding to not a lot of people. I've seen people, of course, on the internet where everybody's mad about everything, alluding to that they didn't like her performance. And I really didn't find much wrong with it. I mean, I thought her fight scene was actually really cool at the beginning. And
that was badass.
Yeah, it was really bad. Like, she did well, even though I hate to say this because I don't like picking on people's looks and stuff, but her face is kind of distracting at this point. I don't know.
Well, it doesn't move.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. And she's a great actress. I don't care what anyone says. She is a great actress. But it doesn't move. You're right. It stopped moving a couple years back. And it's distracting sometimes.
I think she's happy.
But the moment when she jumps into at the very beginning where she lunges into the ocean to go back or whatever, that was probably one, as weird as it sounds, that was the CGI moment where I'm like, that was ridiculous. I don't know why, but it looked so fake that it took me out of the movie for like 3 seconds. It's a weird thing that I had.
It is weird. You're right. I agree with you.
All right. Well, speaking
of thing and not the fact that she jumped in the water.
I got it. Speaking of, was anybody surprised that she was still alive? I don't think anyone actually thought that they executed her when they didn't show it, right?
Yeah, that wasn't like a gotcha moment.
Mm-mm. Yeah, you know what? I don't think it was a gotcha moment. I agree. At the same time, I wouldn't have been surprised if she didn't show up again.
Oh, John, you're so gullible.
I guess I was trying to find an easy way to make it sound like I. Yeah, you're right. I'm gullible. I bought it.
All right. Well, here's where we move on to like the coolest parts. I think James Wan staged some serious underwater action. This is one of, to me, the most creative movies I have seen this year. I felt like every scene underwater was full of imagination. It was full of just creativity, just stunning realization of what that world could be. And I was dreading that part, like absolutely dreading it, because I don't like Aquaman. I've just never been a fan. So I'm just like, can they just keep him on land the whole time? Which I know would be dumb, but I just didn't want to do it. But it was so cool. It was almost like Star Wars underwater in a way. I loved the design, everything about the design, the CGI. Nothing didn't work for me that I saw. And the trench scene I thought was just fantastic, where they introduced like the horror elements. Where do you guys land on the special effects and the creativity? Brian, you talked about it a little bit. Where do you land on this?
Oh, I was blown away by it. The imagination used was almost like Disney level. The jellyfish as lighting sources for these arenas. Gosh, I there were times though where some of the color choices for some of these things, I kept expecting Ed Harris and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio to pop up from the abyss, because it looked like some of these watercraft were from that movie.
I'm just picturing the middle of that fight, Ed Harris dropping into the middle of that fight in that suit where he has to breathe water, and he was just like, "How did I get here?" That whole suit thing.
As those trench creatures or whatever were swarming around Aquaman and Mirror, and they're headed down into the trench, and mm-hmm. those glow of the red flares were going, and all these things are just swarming them. That was just such a cool moment. There was the fight scene in the house was absolutely phenomenal. I was really blown away by the whole thing.
Oh, and the Morocco, or not Morocco, Italy. The Italy fight scene I thought was so well done and staged. And I know it's a set, and some people are like, it looks like a fake set. I wasn't taken out of that at all.
Oh, I was.
Were you?
It was. Now, some of the, like, the back. Yes, I know basically this whole movie is practically CGI backgrounds and stuff, but it's one thing when you're setting up a place that's underwater that you have no, you know, this is just obviously this is fake, but when you're portraying an area that is an exact real location, and it just looks like you can almost see the green screen or the blurred painting backgrounds behind it, like from the old movies, you know, it looked like they could have spent a few more dollars on it.
All right.
I was fine with the Italy scene. I thought it looked gorgeous. I liked the actual feel to it. I don't think you could have had a real place. It didn't look like a real place in Italy. It looked like something that was out of your imagination. And I thought that was a lot better than actually showing a place in Italy, like a real place in Italy. So I really enjoyed that. I liked the feel of it all. And I loved the stuff underwater. I loved how each nation was a little bit different from one another, with the exception of the two that we dealt with, each of the underwater nations. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit of telling that story was fun. It was cool. And it was just bravo to Warner Brothers for being able to pull this off.
There were moments where I was afraid it was going to be too much. Throughout the movie, I had this Phantom Menace vibe. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Where there's so much CGI, I'm like, at some point, this is just going to – the movie's going to suck, because they're too focused on making – you know, having everything look great, not enough focused on making the movie enjoyable. It never happened for me. Throughout the movie, I kept thinking, this is like what I wanted Phantom Menace to – and this is a weird analogy because it's not Star Wars or anything, but it's like what I wanted Phantom Menace to be, because you have a complete world or worlds that are created that I've never seen before, and it's dazzling, but also you have a movie that isn't boring the shit out of me, and I can enjoy, and I feel like it's fun throughout. And that's what they managed to pull off here that I thought was very, very similar to what I wanted from Phantom Menace but didn't get. Does that make
sense?
Well,
it's easier to do like trade wars and politics when people are actually trying to kill each other.
True.
It definitely makes it more interesting, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. True story.
I don't want to be king.
Once he is named Ocean Master, it'll be too late. The power at his disposal will be unlike anything you have ever seen.
I'm from the surface. No one is going to take me seriously. Okay, I don't even know where to begin.
By winning the hearts and minds of the people, by proving to them that you're worthy, and retrieving this.
I already got one of those.
Not like this one, you don't.
That leads us to the end battle. That was the scene I had seen in the trailer and also was dreading, because the idea of, because again, I don't like Aquaman. Or I didn't until here.
I think we've established this.
I just want to say it one more time.
Like Aquaman?
Not a fan. No, not a fan.
All right,
I am now. I'm coming around.
I know you were a little wishy-washy on it, so just want to make sure we were clear.
The idea of people riding sharks and seahorses and everything else into battle, I thought was hysterical. And there's no way in the world that's going to work, because, I mean, come on. It's so ridiculous. And every aspect of it was cool as hell, and I couldn't get enough of it. I actually wanted a more battle scene. Tell me I'm crazy here. This was fantastic.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess you're crazy. You know, I don't agree with you being crazy, but if you wanted us to tell you you're crazy, you're crazy.
Do you agree it was a fantastic scene?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was a lot of fun to watch. And I thought it was, a little bit more of that would have been great. And the whole fact that you're like, okay, well, why is he riding a Paleolithic creature into battle that no one's ever seen before? How do they have them down there? Oh, never mind. It's asking too many questions. Because we got sharks in armor. And then we got seahorses in armor. And then we got fish people. And then we got, like, crab people. And then, oh my God, here comes a giant sea monster. And look who's riding the sea monster. It's Aquaman.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was like Lord of the Rings, you know, Return of the King, that big battle scene at the just underwater.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I loved about it was, especially whenever the big crab, kraken, whatever it is, that comes flying out of the ground, it just made me want a Gears of War movie. Really, really bad.
Me too. Yeah. Dave Bautista wants that too. Let's make that happen. Let's make that happen. I mean,
he doesn't want to do Guardians anymore.
Here's what I'm from now on, whenever I refer to this to people, I'm just going to say the Julie Andrews monster.
Yeah. When Julie Andrews comes crashing up from the bottom of the ocean floor,
I hear she can be equally as scary.
True. We get Julie Andrews cracking through the floor of the ocean. Huh? Huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
Nobody. Yeah, that bombed. All right. So overall, I think we all can say we really enjoyed it. Pick a favorite moment. Like, if you had to pick one moment where that's the moment you're going to tell your friends about, what's your favorite moment from Aquaman, Brian?
Gosh. To sell the movie to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's maybe on the fence of seeing it, and I've got to pick a scene that says, you got to go see it because of this.
Mm-hmm.
It would be... Yeah, it'd be that final battle. It'd be the final battle. Or maybe just the 3D effects alone. The 3D effects alone is worth going to see it.
Oh, man, I don't like 3D very much, but the 3D in this is amazing for the most part. It's not enough for the entire movie. It's amazing.
Yep.
John, favorite moment?
I would have to just say that it's Jason Momoa just chewing on the scenery the entire movie is worth watching the movie.
All right, pick a moment, bitch. Don't the whole movie.
If I have to pick a moment, God damn it. Just him standing on top of the Kraken, like holding the trident, looking all like badass.
That's a great one. Mine is the moment in the bar where the guys want to take a selfie with him. I don't know. Oh, yeah,
that one was awesome.
I just laughed. It was so ridiculous, and it was so Jason Momoa-esque.
Oh yeah, like that's like, especially when the pictures go from him looking annoyed to him having fun with them.
Having fun, yeah, that's why I loved it. It was great. Well, because
it made me think of that video, that the viral video that went around with him with the throwing the hatchet.
Yes,
you ever seen?
Oh
that?
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He just,
or all his Comic-Con pictures where he's clutching on the guy's girlfriends and shoving the guys away.
Exactly.
That's why it stood out to me, because that was so Momoa, how it ends. I mean, it starts off so like every other DC character, no offense to DC, but like your last few movies, nobody's really smiling a whole lot. And then it just goes to, this is a new guy. This guy's different. Right. He's going to have fun with beer.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that's interesting is like, so I mentioned this before, but Throne of Atlantis, which was in the very cool animation style they're doing right now for the DC cartoons, this story was actually told there, only it had the entire Justice League. But every beat by beat was that cartoon. As far as like, there's in that cartoon, it starts off with a submarine scene. This movie starts off with a submarine scene. When we meet Aquaman, he gets into a bar fight, sort of. He sort of gets into a bar fight here, only it ends completely different. It's a lot of the same story, just told in live action. And I thought that was like Orin's trying to destroy the top side because he's Orin and he's an asshole. So a lot of that is a story that I've already seen before. And this is, and I just like the way they executed it here better than the cartoon, which is something that's different for me to say, because sometimes I like the cartoon better.
I haven't watched, but really just a couple of the DC Universe cartoons. So, but yeah, I may give that you say Throne of Atlantis?
Is
that
Throne of Atlantis?
Okay. I may give it a shot.
Yeah, it comes. So you've got the first Justice League movie that they did. Then Throne of Atlantis is the sequel to that. And then there's a progression of all these Justice League movies. But yeah.
I feel like I just had a nerdgasm.
Well, are you moist?
You better clean up.
All right. Well, this is Speaking of cleaning up, let's talk about DC now that it has – that segue doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Let's say you're each in charge of DC. You're the boss. How do you – because this has been all over the place in terms of what they're doing. How do you handle the DC universe going forward, John? What would be your mission
statement? I would use this as an excuse to stay the course and complete a – and continue a unified front as far as the movies we're putting out. None of this breaking off and doing a weird Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix or anything else, or trying to do standalones. Just continue with the same idea and branch out from here.
Brian, what about you? You get your choice. How would you do it?
I would ramp things up. I think they've got a good base. We've had all these movies are minimum 2 hours long, 2.5 hours long. We've got deep backstories on everybody from Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Batman, to everybody. I say we would focus more on the Legion of Doom. You have a Legion of Doom movie. They've all, the only exposure we've gotten to these characters are these little stingers and all these 1 or 2 minute little scenes, if that. So we have a Legion of Doom movie. And then we follow that up with, we ramp up the pace. So instead of waiting for all these individual sequels for, let's say, Wonder Woman and another Batman movie, and what are we going to do with Superman now that, you know, whatever, I don't know what's going on with him at this point.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's going on with him at this point.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, he's still Superman.
So we still got to ramp up the pace a little bit, because all these movies are, these people are getting older. There's contracts to be thought about. There's all this other stuff. So we do what the Super Friends cartoons used to do, and that is you have the main. You might see 6 or 7 of the Super Friends in an episode. However, the story really just follows maybe 2 or 3 of the characters. So basically, you're teaming up maybe Flash and Cyborg in a movie. So you have all these two or three movies where you have 2 or 3 of these Justice League characters. You know, after, so you have the Legion of Doom first, and then boom, you have those. The DC team up movies after that.
Yeah, I'm of the same mindset. I don't know what the hell DC's thinking these days. I mean, they're kind of they're so schizophrenic in terms of all over the place, and they just don't know what they're doing. Nope. I feel like the voices of above are just telling them to do different things. They're like, okay, we'll do a Joaquin Phoenix movie and we'll do Shazam, which, don't get me wrong, I think both of those things could be very good. I'm not knocking either one of them. Did you give up doing a universe? I mean, if that's the case, that's fine, I guess. I just don't know why you would do that, because you can make a connected universe. You just don't have to do it the way Zack Snyder did it. That's literally all you have to do is the movies you're doing, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, prove that you guys can do the formula. You just need to get away from, like, I really think Zack Snyder's version, which I liked those movies, but they just didn't connect with audiences. These two are. So you can build that universe. You just need to come back to it instead of getting away from it and doing all kinds of side missions. And I like that. Like, have some buddy team-up movies. And, you know, people might get more excited for those characters if you do that.
Yeah, because, I mean, take Aquaman. I mean, we've explored the full reaches of the depths of the ocean at this point. So what else? There's been a battle for the throne. He's got the throne. What, are we going to fight for the throne again for another 2.5 hours in a few years? Let's not do that. Let's team him up with somebody else maybe somebody that's got some sort of Egyptian ties. Like, there's a character, Dr. Fate, who's kind of in that outer reaches of Justice League Friends type of thing. So you have Shazam has connections to Egypt. So you bring in some ancient whatever Atlantis stuff that ties in with some of these ancient things like Egypt or Greece or Themyscira or what have you, and you bring a couple of these characters together.
I like it. So
I like it too.
Speaking of, if we're gonna get an Aquaman 2, I can almost guarantee it, because this movie's lighting the box office on fire and people are raving about it. What do you want from a sequel? Do you want what direction can they? We already kind of talked about that, but if you get it just a straight Aquaman 2, where do you want it to go? What do you, is there anything you want? You guys know the comics. I don't. So my answer would be do the same thing, but cooler. You know, that's my answer.
Well, I definitely don't want a Fight for the Throne movie again. We've already had that. We don't need another one. But Maybe a movie where he's got to defend Atlantis, or I like Brian's idea of doing a team up movie, or having him do something where one of the lower tier DC characters ends up partnering up with him, like somebody who can really just play off Aquaman's character, and they end up doing something slightly different that involves both their worlds. So that idea seems like where I want to go, but definitely not another fight for the throne. Let the throne be the throne and it's done, and let's not fight over it every single movie.
Yeah. For instance, you maybe introduce Martian Manhunter, who is a very popular character in the Justice League realm of people there.
Okay.
He's a Martian, and you could maybe have some sort of team up with Aquaman where maybe Aquaman kind of helps him assimilate with the humans. So you got this guy coming down from above. You got this guy coming up from the bottom. Says, "Hey, bro, look, I know these people they tick you off in certain ways, but trust me, they're not as bad as what they come across. Sure, they're scared of you right now. They don't know what to expect, but he just kind of helps him become part of the team, become part of the planet."
Cool. Let's do that, but better.
So yeah, so then you got the potential to put Aquaman in space. See what he does up there.
Okay. No, I don't want that. I do not want that. James Wan, you want James Wan to come back?
Yeah.
Sure.
James Wan directing it. Yeah. I mean, he did a good job here. Why not let him continue on?
I'm in. I'm looking forward to whatever they do next. And I want to see this again in the theater. I really, really can't wait. So a final score of $10 is the full price of admission. What do you give Aquaman? Brian.
7.5.
John.
I'm at 7.5 also.
I'm at 7.5 also. Clean sweep. Bam.
Wow.
Yeah. My man. Sorry, I just
been redheads, like, right?
Just been wanting to say that.
Yeah. That was a redneck Momoa.
That was more of a yeehaw, wasn't it? All right, guys, thanks for listening. And remember, you can always find The Hollywood Outsider on whatever podcast app you use, as well as thehollywoodoutsider.com. We'll be back on January 8th or 9th, whatever Wednesday that is, and with a brand new episode. So thanks for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Remember, the next time you go to the theater to see Mary Poppins, Bumblebee, or Aquaman, buy popcorn.
Is it moist?
It's moist.
Ooh, that would be...
Moist popcorn?
That would not be good.
You need to stop.
Keep reaching down to the bottom of the bag. It'll get moist real quick.